Thank you, David, for that very kind introduction. I'm going to just do the sort of critical minerals 101. I'm going to set the scene, and then you've got the people who really know the stuff going to come up and talk about it. So I'm going to talk a little about the critical mineral strategy and the role of science and technology as part of that. Critical minerals, semiconductors, and data are the oil, steel, and electricity of the 21st century. I think that is their importance. They are the next industrial revolution as part of this. As we decarbonize, as our society changes, they become more important as part of that. I didn't say that. Lord Sedwell said that as part of that. And you can see this on this next slide here. You can see on the left-hand side a whole bunch of critical minerals listed in small types, so you can't read them. In the middle, you'll see all sorts of technologies that may use those minerals. And I think it's worth just, a lot of talk in the media, and we tend to think that this is just about batteries or wind farms. There's not. There's a lot of technology that has a lot of minerals in it. I'll come back to that in a minute. Absolutely, it drives the move to renewables. Also, the moves to electric mobility as part of that, but also implicit in areas such as defense and space around that. So it's a strategically important sector. It's rapidly growing and it's changing. This is some data from the IEA that shows that this very same thing. This is the amount, the average amount of minerals in a vehicle here, an electric car. So an average electric car contains over 200 kilograms per vehicle, whereas a conventional car contains slightly less than 50. The statistic I always use is that an electric car has 11 kilometers of copper wire in it, compared to 1 kilometer of copper wire in a conventional car. So that really shows the real difference that you get with these sort of technologies. You can also see as we move to different technologies at the bottom in terms of onshore, offshore wind, solar, nuclear, and the incumbent technology is not any longer in the UK, coal, because we closed our last coal-fired power station on September the 31st last year at 5:30 p.m., just in case you wondered, around that, and also natural gas at the bottom. But what you can see is, you know, the kilograms per megawatt of power produced there, significantly more critical minerals or minerals in general around that. We'll get to why I keep calling them critical minerals and then correcting myself at the next step. Around this, when is a mineral critical and when isn't it critical? That's going to be what Gavin's going to tell you all about. I think it's worth thinking a little bit about the global geopolitical picture that David alluded to in the start here. These minerals are produced in a range of different countries around the world, and this is just a few kind of picked out for 2019 around that. And you'll see a preponderance and you'll see a difference in where those minerals come from. You'll see also what the number of those minerals are and some of the uses that they're put to. But it'd be wrong to think about the story of minerals and critical minerals as a story only about primary production, only where do those minerals come from, where is that ore loading body, or whatever the geological phrase is, he says at the Royal Geological Society, around that, because actually they travel, they move quite a lot. This is just a kind of a cartoon. If you think about the midstream, they might be mined in one country, but they're refined into a concentrate in a different country, and they're packaged often into a final product in a third country. So we talk a lot about the value chain for these minerals and the way that they move around the globe as part of that. And you can see here that they move, this is kind of the batteries around that, and there's a midstream. Why are they critical? But if you look at the extraction picture and the refining picture and the countries that they come from, I think it tells a story that most people are probably aware of in this room. So on the left-hand side is a number of the minerals that are very important, the rare earths in magnets, lithium, cobalt, nickel, in batteries, copper I've already mentioned. And just interestingly, at the bottom of it, which I love this graph, here is the current kind of incumbent natural gas and oil extraction at the bottom. And what you'll see is there's a markedly different picture in the extraction and processing for the incumbent technologies of gas and oil vis-a-vis the minerals, you know, geologically, I mean, geopolitically, they're geographically, they're different. But also you'll see this value chain that we talk about where you extract the minerals and where you process them is also very markedly different around the globe. So David said we produced a strategy in 2022, recognition really that we need a resilience for the future given that picture that I've just talked about. We put together the first UK's critical mineral strategy. That strategy is ACE. I won't name the government minister who David knows very well, whose idea that was. Anyway, I won't. He said, we must, he, there's a clue. He said, we must accelerate the growth of the UK's domestic markets, we must collaborate with international partners, and we must enhance international markets to make them more responsible. We brought two things into existence at the time to deliver that strategy. We convened a critical minerals expert committee and a number of people in this room who I recognise are members of that committee. And we it's a really good committee. It's one of the best expert committees I've worked with because it's a real mixture of academia, industry, economists, producers, midstream financiers. We get a real kind of really picture, and you get a real sense that the UK is a place where a lot of that critical thinking is going on about minerals and their use. We also, at that time, the first strategy in 2022, founded the Critical Minerals Intelligence Centre to really continuously monitor those supply chains and project the future supply and demand. And Gavin, who's the current head of that, will talk a little bit more about that. The core of this question of criticality is quite important, and it really looks at the UK economic vulnerability with respect to the supply of minerals versus the global supply. The challenges of criticality assessments, again, Gavin can talk to us, they look backwards around that, and the challenges to project forward for that. This is the currently, is it 2025 or 2024? The late 24 assessment that came out of those 34 minerals, which was an increase from the 18 or 20 in the first strategy that came out there around that, reflecting, I think, a changing situation of the criticality of these minerals, but also the assessment of where they're used in the UK supply chain as part of that. Just to pause on the ACE strategy for a second, before I then tell you we're about to change it, as is government's way with these sort of things, I think it's worth just looking at the kind of 10 or so things that were in that, which were important kind of headlines around that. Domestic production, skills, R&D and circular economy. Recognising in the UK, we do have a limited supply of some of those minerals, but also we have a lot of the knowledge of skills. We have a lot of the top world R&D in this area, and actually we're pushing very hard on circularity as part of that. We want to collaborate to diversify supply chains with the UK companies operating overseas and that diplomatic and trading and development relationships. Actually, our SCDO, and I've worked with them, are really great global partners out there working with British industry in those supplier countries, on those processing countries, in order to collaborate with that. But there's also been a recognition that we must do that responsibly. We must do that responsibly in the way that we operate with the highest ESG standards. This is a sector that has had a checkered history with respect to this. And actually, many consumers are now pushing really hard to remove some of that. But, you know, nobody wants small children mining minerals in countries in their motor vehicle around that. So there's a big push around that. And also responsible finance. London and the market in London is one of the largest mining finance markets, capital markets in the world. We have had a number of successes for that. The National Wealth Fund has put 28 million recently into Cornish Metals facility. And the UK Infrastructure Bank has put equity investment of around 24 million into Cornish Lithium. There are new companies like Green Lithium in the Northeast opening up, as well as incumbent companies such as Pensana and Rare Earths, who are doing some of the reprocessing and processing of those rare earth magnets, as well as highly innovative companies in the UK like Hypermag, who are pioneering hydrogen recycling of rare earth magnets from disk drives in your computer around that as well. So there's great innovation, but there's also that scale up and investment in that. I said that we've done a lot around the innovation and the R&D, and you can begin to see that in terms of the research projects like the one I've chosen here, which is on climate, which is looking at this question of how to build a more sustainable supply chain, particularly in the rare earths around that, spending significant R&D capital in order to deliver that. I think a real strength of the UK is its international partnerships. We are, I feel, very much seen in the international sphere as a fair broker in many of this. And there are many countries, when I've been on international missions around that, who want to talk to the UK, particularly because they want to access our skills and our R&D around that. And we have a number of bilateral agreements that we've signed as part of that that are listed on the screen there, as well as working through a number of multilateral engagements, some of which I think, David, are changing as we speak around that. The Mineral Security Partnership was led very heavily out of the US. I think we await to find out what will happen to something like that. So we did the last strategy in 2022. So it was really mainly written in 2021 and published in 2022. And the new government has come in and this is not government policy. It's subject to change. A strategy develops around this. The assembly's put on there. We're really thinking now about a new strategy. And really, you know, the ministers are pushing us hard to have an ambitious strategy to help kickstart the economic growth, support the industries of tomorrow, more targeted, effective, fewer interventions that will grow our strength and that articulate an impact on people's lives, working through business and capitalises on that economic growth piece. I call this pitch the Wheel of Fortune around this, but this is the Wheel of Fortune. And what we're doing, we're talking to people now really about how to that build that new critical mineral strategy. You'll see some of the same flavours, producing more, recycling or circularising more, getting that supply signal and clear demand and making sure industry is aware of that need, growing our international partnerships, using City of London as a centre of mining finance. It's not only the big banks are here, the London Metal Exchange is here as well, but also always wrapped in that very clear, responsible and transparent supply chain framing, which is important to this. So hopefully in my very brief introduction, I've given you a flavour of the imperative around minerals in the changing world. As we decarbonise, they become more important as we shift. They're globally very mobile. They come out of the ground a lot, but in fact, they're midstream that move. And we need a strategy that does bring all these different elements that are on this screen here in order to deliver the safety, security and the economic growth in this area. Thank you very much indeed.